Welcome back, Rock Movers. This is season 6, and it is all about the boys. We've got some amazing guests, so if you're ready, let's start moving some rocks. Welcome back, Rock Movers. Season 6 just keeps getting better and better and better. And we have guests like today's Rock Mover, Dr. Calvin Lawrence. Dr. Calvin is a fellow Texan. He's been married 34 years to Amanda. They have a son, Caleb, who is also an ACU graduate like my kids. Dr. Lawrence is originally from Virginia, but we got him as soon as we could here in Texas. He's got degrees, pedigrees. This man is so educated, so intelligent, but he has made a tour of all the very special universities in Texas that are near and dear to my heart: Abilene Christian, TWU, TCU, and Baylor. So he has chosen the best of the best, and now he uses all of that experience to help others move their rocks through his business, Calvin Lawrence Speaks, where he does motivation, talks about diversity, leadership practices, and he coaches. So without further ado, let's jump right into some powerful rock moving conversations with Dr. Calvin Lawrence. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Karen. I appreciate you. And I'm so honored and blessed to be on the show.
Well, we are blessed to have you, and I'm looking forward to this because, of course, before we jump on a podcast, we always have a little bit of time to talk off camera, and now I wish we would have been recording it because we had some great conversations about our kids and about schools and about some things that you have just chosen, this path that you've chosen that has just helped expand how you see the world, how you see other people, and this experience of what you now get to do for other people. So I'm not going to steal your thunder. I'm going to let you share it. But tell us a little bit about, because we talk about rocks being those heavy things that happen to us in life. As amazing and smart and intelligent and capable as you are, I have a guess that you've faced a few rocks in your life.
Yeah, I think you're right. We'll get to a real special thing that I'm getting ready to do. Well, I'll share a little bit. I've got this book that's coming out.
Yeah.
And at the beginning of the book, I think there's a place in there where I knew I needed to deal with some issues that were really tough times in my life. I called them desert times. I probably should have called them rock times. If I'd known I was coming on this show, I would have been talking about how I removed the rocks. Or I said that wrong, how the rocks got removed.
And oh, yeah.
Usually it was someone who was brought in, who came alongside of me or who helped me along the way. So a big part of that deal, the rock moving piece, was because you can't, a lot of times you can't move the rock by yourself. You need that help. You need assistance. You need a mentor. You need whoever. And there were so many people in my life. The neat thing about it was I had to go back, and I'm getting older now, Karen. You're still young, but I had to kind of work on my memory and say, did that really happen? Yeah, that really happened. And so that was really neat for me to go back and then reminisce a little bit, reflect really deeply about the impact that certain people had on me.
Yeah.
But I'll go back to the first, maybe the one of the first big ones was making a decision that, since you referenced Texas, making the decision to come to Texas, it was a big deal. I had gotten a, like a lot of young people do at that time, I was young, where you get to about the 5-year itch or whatever, and it's like, what else is there? You know, I'm kind of like getting into a stay. I can do this job, but it's like, there's got to be more. Yeah, got to be more to
how
life.
How old were you and at then, that time?
I was still in Virginia. So the first 5 years, I was a teacher coach, and I think I had a comfortable job. No pressure on me, but it was that part of it that I got to a point where there's got to be more. I know I can do more. I'm seeking more. I'm seeking to have a bigger impact, although maybe some of the people who I worked with felt like I was having an impact there. I just felt like there was more for me. And at the time, I didn't really know which way to go. You know, so what do you do when you don't know where to go? You pray, you ask for guidance, and you also have these people around you who right. may give these wonderful suggestions. One of my best buddies, who eventually became the best man at my wedding, and he was a teammate of mine when I played college football, he said, you know, maybe you should think about getting your master's degree. And so when I started to do that, it kind of rolled a lot of things, and maybe the rock started to kind of get pushed aside a little bit even yeah. then. And the Texas thing, I'll make this long story short, because it's a long story, because I did all the research.
Because you played football in Virginia when you went
in Virginia,
to okay.
a little school James called Madison. James Madison.
Got
yeah,
it.
That was the first school that may not have gotten on the bio, but it's there. And
yeah.
then I hit all those Texas schools when I came
well,
down.
Well, it was there. I just kind of glazed over it because it wasn't in Texas. So,
yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah,
sorry, yeah, Virginia. No, sorry, Virginia.
My wife is a lot like you. Everything starts with Texas. And so
I like her already.
Yes. Yes, ma'am. So, yeah, I did. I played there, and that was a big part of my foundation. Yeah. It, when I write in the book, I spend a lot of time talking about James Madison and the people and the relationships. Many of those relationships I still have. I've been back here recently to a couple of homecomings, and it's just neat to reconnect to some of those old buddies who some I hadn't seen in 40 years. And then I go back, and then it's like we're never apart. So, but that started me, and I had to branch out because the schools that were, we shared this in the pre-talk right before this. So this was the part, like you said, we could have taped it, but it would have been nice. It was me looking at schools in the state and trying to do a graduate assistant program because I wanted to get it paid for. And at least I was thinking smart like that, Karen. I didn't do everything smart when I was young.
You had a couple good moments.
Yes. Yeah, I had a couple of good moments. That was one of them. And I thought, you know, instead of me, I need to go and I need to do it full time and I need to do it and maybe get it paid for, hopefully get it paid for. And so I was looking for assistantships, and that's the crux of things not opening up in Virginia at all the universities there because the timing wasn't quite right.
Yeah.
So when I sent out feelers and I got acceptance letters and whatnot, Texas and TCU was one of them. And then TCU got real aggressive about, you know, hey, if you really like us, why don't you come on down and visit? Well, I took a visit, and they, of course, you Texans are real smooth. They took me to all the best.
We got that hospitality thing down.
Yes, yeah, that Texas They took me to all the best places. I never saw any of the bad stuff, and so I came down, and they're like, I'm sold. So packed up my bags, almost like the Beverly Hillbillies. Had my buddy, who was that buddy, and he helped me drive down here from Virginia to Texas way back in 1988. And the rest is history. The other part I'll throw in there real quick, when you marry a Texan, you don't leave Texas, right? So there's a little bit of interplay in between my graduate deal and whatnot, but that is what kept me here, the marrying of a Texas
yeah.
Texas girl. Yeah.
So you met your wife here in Fort Worth?
Yes, met her in Fort Worth, met her through mutual acquaintances. Again, mm-hmm. I had these mentors. I had two sets, really. They were responsible for the marriage, and I still give them the credit for it. And one of the sets, we always take them out to coming up, Valentine's Day. We go out and we do a Valentine's double date because they were our matchmakers.
Oh, that's sweet.
But the other set were the TCU family that really kind of took me in their wing. And because of them, I was able to stay in Texas after I finished my degree because I had a job waiting for me back in Virginia. My principal at my high school became the superintendent of the whole district while I was in college. That's a neat thing. So when I got out and then I started working, he got me a job. It was like the easiest interview you ever wanted was he came to my house, had a graduation gift for me. And he said, are you working? What are you going to do with your life? Because I'm out of school. And I'm like, I have no idea. And so he said, well, he gave me three things. He said, tomorrow, go see this guy at this time, blah, blah, blah. Well, I didn't realize at the door that he had hired me. So when I get there, the interview is all about, this is how much you're going to make. This is
That's
where you're
going to really
go.
Interview.
Oh, Yes. And I love that kind of intro.
That's kind of,
had a lot more
kind
of those.
Yeah.
And then the last thing was, oh, and by the way, there's a coaching position on top of this. They have found out that you are back in the area. So you might want to go see those guys. So that's what my first interview looked like. Yeah. Pretty cool.
Well, that's pretty amazing. But you ended up staying in Texas.
Ended up no regrets, as you said before. Texas got
I mean,
me
you're wearing
here,
a cowboy shirt. So if you're listening to this, I'm just going to warn you, you've got a cowboy shirt on.
Yeah.
And when I say cowboys, I don't mean like the Western Cowboys. I mean like the Dallas Cowboys.
You mean the Dallas Cowboys, right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the football team. Another little quick story. One of the guys I played with at Madison became a cowboy superstar. So a big reason, and then my mother-in-law, of course, was the biggest
big
cowboy fan.
Yeah.
So I had to make her feel comfortable with me. So we connected again when we got down here. Charles Haley is in the book, and he was a big-time cowboy around the time that the Cowboys were winning those Super Bowls. And so it was a really cool deal. But anyway, all of that helped to ingratiate me with my new mother-in-law and her family and my wife's family. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad that they coerced you and talked you into staying and made it possible. So, yeah, I think one of the best things about Texas and my daughter, I'm not from Texas. My husband is also. You married a Texan.
Okay.
You stay here. I was born in New Mexico, lived in Florida, and then came to Texas. My parents are from Texas. But my daughter, who was born in Florida, competed in Texas. We have these things called rodeo queen pageants. So they're kind of like a Miss pageant, but it's for rodeo. And she did a speech about how she wasn't from Texas, but the best thing that she loved about Texas was that Texas is this melting pot of people. And it's such a hospitable place that just absorbs you in. And really being a Texan is something that your heart decides. It's not really a birthright for some of us. My husband would disagree, but it is something that you choose to do and you fall in love with, you know, all the things that Texas represents. But we did a funny little speech. She called herself a Floor Mexitex because she was from Florida. We lived in New Mexico and she was finally a Texan and now all her kids are Texans.
It.
But she was a Floor Mexitex.
Love it.
But okay, so you have this amazing doctorate degree behind you. And now you're writing a book about this journey and the things that you're doing. What is the book going to be called?
The book's going to be called The Happy Leader. And I have to, that's the first half of it. And then there's a subtitle. The happy came from my LinkedIn image, which people have a tendency to think of me as a happy guy. And I haven't always been that way, Karen. That's part of what I may have shared that. But the last 4 or 5 years, amazingly, during all that COVID stuff and whatnot, and even during the era with the Black Lives Matter movement and the some of the really negative things that were going on in America around that time, I had to go the opposite route. I didn't want to come in with bitterness and anger and hate, and there was so much division. It was about bringing people together.
Yeah.
So the whole happiness thing. And then I'll throw this real quick in and go back to the title. My mom was one of the happiest, most joyful, most relatable people you'd ever want to meet. She was the best term to use with her was the type of person that never meets a stranger.
Yeah.
So by the time she got done with you, she would know how old your children were, or where they lived, blah, blah, blah. She's that type. She was that type. I am not, but I have worked really hard to become, and maybe it's something, I've become a whole lot more like her. I've been an introvert most of my life. And I know that most people don't believe that now, because they can't hardly get me to stop talking. But I guess I'm the ambivert or whatever the middle is, because I can become introverted when I need to be. But when I want to, when I need to be extroverted, I can be extroverted as well. So let me get back to the title.
Yeah.
So The Happy Leader, and then the second half or the bottom half is The Relatable Stories of Influence and Hope. Now, the second half was hard to get to, but we made it through me and my editor. And my editor, that's a whole nother story behind that. She was the wife of one of my mentors who brought me to Texas. So here's that.
There's that connection again.
Person to help you with the rock kind of thing. She was one of those people. We ran a marathon together. There's a lot of different stories. But she would have cost me, I don't know how much. And she gave me her editing skills because she's published 5 books for free just because she wanted to do it. because, I mean, she loves me and my wife. So that was a neat deal. But she worked me through, we fleshed through the second half of that title to relatable stories of influence and hope, because the stories in the book are true stories that I couldn't have made up anyway if I had wanted to. And then you can relate to them, but they're all about hope, because wherever we were, or whatever happened to me, or whatever the rocks were that I had to get out of the way, there was never any bitterness, and the people who came alongside would not allow me to become bitter or despairing. So it's a hopeful book, and hopefully that's the crux of it. It'll get across to some people that don't lose hope. There's always hope, and there's always someone who can help you and get, if you can't do anything else, find someone who can come alongside of you and help you get to where you need to be.
Well,
so,
I can't.
Yeah, that's the book.
I can't think of a time in my life that message has been more needed. Mm-hmm. You know, I think there are so many people facing so many things with economy and health and just life that they're seeking that reassurance that hope still exists and hope is still out there. So I love that that's the message that you're sharing. As someone who serves and teaches on leadership, how do you correlate this underlying thing that we can't quantify? Hope isn't something we can just say, okay, you know, here's the KPI for hope. But it's something that I believe is a human necessity. You know, there's Tony Robbins talks about the seven basic human needs. And hope is we have to have something to look forward to. There has to be something that as a leader, as a business owner, as a employee, no matter your position, your background, we all come from this human place of needing to feel relevant. We need to feel important, needed, or necessary. We have to feel like our lives matter. And it sounds like your mom was someone that could breathe that into people and that you've picked that up. And I love that. So how do you do that with your teams that you're coaching, or the places that you go in and speak to about this?
Right. Well, first, let me throw, since you mentioned my mom in such a great way, let me throw this in. She, by trade, was a nurse.
Of course she was. That makes perfect sense.
It makes perfect sense. I think she was just built for it. And I say it in the book that it was like, I know back in the day, women didn't have a lot of opportunities, to do certain things in her time frame. But there couldn't have been a better role to play, because if you look at what a nurse does, and nurses, doctors are great, but the nurses are the ones that are doing the work.
They're
the ones that are really the day-to-day, as my wife would say, the foot soldiers that are doing those things, those little needed things, and giving you hope. So in a roundabout way, and I'm kind of hard-headed, stubborn, you know, as most guys are, Karen. I'm sure you're... But in a roundabout way, I mean, she ingrained that in both me and my sister, that there's a way to do it, that you relate to people, that you, and you said it, you can't quantify it. So I don't have a number figure that I could put on it and how many times you need to do it. But it's about these relationships and how you build them and how you work with people. And then you whatever it is that they are needing to work towards, whether it's self-development, career development, spiritual awareness in most cases, then it gives you the entree to start working on that with them, because that makes them hopeful. That allows them to see there's more than just what I have right now, what I have right here. It's kind of like going back to my original story. I was becoming somewhat not hopeful and not as hope. I won't say hopeless, but I was getting to a point where what more is there? And then once the doors started opening up, there's hope. I can do better. I can learn more. I can develop myself a little bit more. What's the career part of it? But I didn't even realize the marriage part was going to come, that I needed that to get to the other thing, and all of that connected too. So I think it just starts with a little small, it's like a small mustard seed that you get out there. And then who knows that by the time somebody else may have to water it, somebody else may have to weed and do the other stuff, but you never know where that person can go. You just want to get them started and get them turned around and in the right direction.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So what you were sharing and just kind of this message, it's just such a great reminder of something that just keeps coming back to me over and over and over again. And that is, we live our lives searching for who, not how, or not what. And there's a book, Dan Sullivan wrote it, Who Not How. But, you know, if we don't have the answers, someone does. If we don't know what to do, someone does. You know, and yes, there's the how and all of that comes next, but really the key is the who. So your mom showed you over and over and over again, I'm sure, who to be in certain circumstances. And now you are showing that for your son, Caleb, and for those that you serve and teach and speak to. And it sounds like that's the whole premise of the book, is just showing people, you know, hope comes in the form of who.
Yes. Yeah, you're right. Hope come. I love it, because maybe I need to spend more time talking that route than the way I talk about it.
Well, it's
hope comes in the form of who. Hope comes in the form of, and a lot of times, and this is what I'd like to do when I go out, you talk a little bit about, you know, what do you do with your, you know, your doctorate, and how do you, so now I feel like it gives me some credibility when I go in and I talk to audiences.
Absolutely.
Yes. But the audiences that I really like to talk to are the younger ones that are evolving, emerging leaders, emerging, and they're questioning everything. But I love it because they have a questioning mind, where some people, so what you do is you kind of help them, point them in a direction.
Right.
And if you tell them you tell them the stories, they're true, but you give them these analogies. One of the, you know, we know one of the greatest teachers in the world always taught through parables, right?
Right.
So you teach and you just do those types of things to share with them that there is something better. There's something out there for you. I may not know what it is, but you can find it.
Mm-hmm.
You find the right person aligned. Oh, and I know where I was going with that. There's a part on both sides to play when I talk about somebody who's helping you and you looking for help. You've got to reach out to that person, as well as those people being acceptable and being open to having you come to see them.
Yeah, for sure.
And I put a lot of onus on the young people in terms of, like, you know, don't be standoffish. That title doesn't mean a whole lot. You're going to the professor's office, or you're going to your teacher's office, or you're going to the principal's office, or you're going to that coach's office, and sit down and talk with them. And many times you'll find out they're really people. They're just like you, maybe just a little bit older, but they've got some things to share and they can help you. And then you break down the barriers of all this other stuff. And then the barriers aren't there with regards to race, with regards to gender, with regards to whatever.
Right.
The barriers come down. And like we were saying, you know, we work together, then we can move these rocks. So I love that. And I'm going to start using that. And thank you for that, Karen.
There you go. That's the power of the conversations, is stuff just comes up, because you just reminded me of that book and that whole premise too. And I don't know if you've ever read this book. I'm a big book nerd. It's called The Go-Giver.
The Go-Giver. I've heard of it, but I haven't read it.
Okay. I would highly recommend you read it. It's written by Bob Berg and David Mann. And it's written in a parable, a story. And so you fall in love with the characters in the book, and they have several. But the premise is that we all gain more when we give first, and how we win when we approach life from the philosophy of a giver. And that, I think, lends back to your story of happiness comes from we are serving and helping others. Hope comes from we're focused on others, helping. And so when, you know, and I talk about this on social media and in my coaching, when we're focused on us, we can see all of our faults, all of our problems, and it magnifies everything. Everything feels so much harder, so much heavier. It's easy to get into a rut or despair or that whole comparison game. Also, that's where this alienation and, you know, seeing people as different when we're focused on ourselves. But when we're focused on others, how we can help, how we can serve, how we can give, that's when you begin to find the commonalities, those common lines and those veins of hope and those veins of Okay. My microphone did something weird again. Those veins of opportunity come from that. So if you could just say, let's give us two takeaways from the book that we can look forward to learning about from this when we read it. What are your two favorite takeaways from the book or your favorite stories that you're going to be sharing? I don't want to give away the whole thing because we got to buy it.
I won't give away the whole thing. I will kind of allude to a little bit about the coming to Virginia. Uh-huh. I'm coming from Virginia to Texas thing. But I'll give you a little bit about, the Tidewater, where I'm from originally. So, and this is good because it kind of gives you an illumination on why I picked a certain cover. So when the uh-huh. book comes out, on the cover, everybody can look for this lighthouse.
Okay.
And the story behind the lighthouse is a neat story because when I first came to Texas, my wife is trying to figure out some stuff once we get married of how to make me feel more like a Texan, but how to make me not miss home so much.
Mm. So were you on the coast?
Yeah.
In Virginia?
I was right on the coast. You talk about lover, the beach boy. I could beach boy bum out all day long. It's right on the coast. Uh-huh. So she thought, wow. And then she started buying these lighthouse pictures, and then she even had a lighthouse replica lighthouse, a little thing. So she put them in the house. Well, that was supposed to be my reminder to keep me in my mind when I wanted to drift back to home. That was my home, but that was, you know, so when I thought about the lighthouse has so many different meanings.
Right.
And even when it talks about guiding people mm-hmm. to a certain place or guiding them safely from the rocks or from the, oh man. And I think about it. There's some that I haven't even thought about yet, but I know they'll come to me because, or someone will share, this is what the lighthouse meant to me. This is what it what it represents to me. But that's a quick story mm-hmm. because that's where I'm from. A lot of military bases there, a lot of, you know, every military, you name it,
right.
Coast Guard, Army, Marines, Air Force, even NASA was there at one time. They moved that thing from Hampton down to Florida and Houston, but there was a time when they flew out of the, you know, that was the big deal. If you look at the Hidden Figures movie, it's Hampton and it's all of that stuff that happened.
I didn't even correlate that. Yeah,
60s.
That was up there.
Yeah, so it's a really cool area, but the lighthouse is, there's still lighthouses on Cape Hatteras.
Sounds like you're already working on your second book there, Calvin.
You know it. By the way, somebody who I work with has already talked to me about the second book,
uh-huh.
who's saying, you got to do this, this, and this. And I won't spoil that one, but there's a spoiler. Because I said this because I'm not a great writer. At least I don't think I am. But and it took me a long time to write it. I hate to tell you how many years it took. But
I think it was perfectly on time.
I think you're right. I think the timing was perfect. And then it's like, okay, now I have this idea for this second book uh-huh. that probably will get produced sometime this year. So we'll see. We'll see how that goes. So that's one story. That was a long roundabout way of getting the story in the lighthouse. Let me see if I can give you one more real quick. So one of the stories is about some of my kids. I'll go back to Virginia just a little bit. And I had this track team,
uh-huh.
which is real prominent at the very beginning of the book. They were phenomenal. One of the hardest things I had to do was leave that school and that culture that I had built up in 5 years. The reason that I was able to do it, and they may not know this group because we still keep together and we need to do a reunion at some point because we haven't done one, is that they were graduating. So I could feel my way out because the ones that I had worked with for 4 years in many cases, they were going. And so, but there was a situation, and one of my top athletes ran through a door. And when I say ran through a door, he put his arm through a door. It was a horrible thing. You probably don't remember these old school doors with the wire meshes in the glass part of the door.
Oh,
but
gosh.
Back in the day, they had that. That's the way they built some of those hallway doors. And we were doing these track drills in the hall, and all of a sudden, he just forgot his own speed, tried to stop. Arm goes through the mesh. So his arm is really ripped up badly. When he comes back to me, I don't know if I went into a shock mode or what, but I start doing some stuff that I probably shouldn't have been doing. And then one of the girls on the team said, "Coach," she snapped me back into reality. She said, "Coach, that's not what we need to do. You know, first aid, this is what, blah, blah, blah." And so all of a sudden, and I call her now Nurse April, but all of a sudden I'm snapped back into reality. We tie this thing off. We get everything up. We put the gauze in the right spot. I've already called 911 and they get there. When the guys get there, it's funny because they say, "Oh, you did everything just right." But I remember that if it hadn't been for April, I could have blown it and he could have lost his arm. It was just that bad.
Wow.
And so to this day, the teasing that I do with her and with this young man named Kenny would say, you know, "April saved your life. It wasn't me. I did the job, but April got me back on track." And then she was the one who sat there and held the thing while I was doing everything else that I needed to do to get you where you needed to be. So it's a neat little story, but there's a little bit more to it than that. But they will love it because it just kind of exemplifies what our track team was about, what our culture was about. We were all about helping each other. And they got me straight that time. So I always like to tell that one because I know I wasn't perfect and I know that wasn't one of my best times, but I was better because, again, here we go. I had somebody with me who got me
to
where I realized what I needed to do. And then we did it and it was done. Yeah.
I think that's also a great example of how she didn't have a doctorate degree. She didn't have, you know, it was just stepping up and doing the right thing at the right time. And that's, I think that's the gift that we truly can be when we are pressed to be our best human selves.
Yes. Yes.
Well, I hate that we're coming to the end of our interview. I feel like we could just keep going.
Yeah,
I know the stories are good.
Rolling. Yeah, you got me kind of worked up a little bit. I almost need to, I don't know if you ever do another one of these or number two,
you got more,
you know where to call.
You got more stories for us?
I got more stories for you.
I love it.
After that book comes out.
I love it. Well, maybe we'll have to do it when you're launched number two. We'll bring you back
ma'am.
And we'll talk about all this. But for those that are hearing this and they're just like, "Man, I just love Dr. Lawrence. He's just amazing. And I want to get the book." We're going to make sure that we have those connections and those links. But how do they best connect and follow you? Because you speak. I know you're on LinkedIn because that's how we connected.
And I also have CalvinLawrenceSpeaks.net.
Okay.
So if they go to CalvinLawrenceSpeaks.net, all one word or all one line,
right?
They can get on my website. The book will be on Amazon and it'll also be on the website. So they can, and then they can follow me with whatever with that. Yeah.
I love it. And you talk about how to live your best corporate life. You talk about the universal language of change and learning. So for someone that is looking at making some big changes, perhaps, you know, before the interview, we were talking about your investment in your education.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And your son graduated from ACU, Abilene Christian. My kids did as well. And so I was kind of joking about my daughter graduating from ACU with this wonderful private education degree.
Yes.
And now she's a stay-at-home mom. And, you know, we sometimes look at things and, man, was that worth it?
Yeah.
And I think for my life, for yours, for my daughters, looking back, we wouldn't be the people we are without those journeys, without those steps.
Right.
So that's where the rocks can be. They're beneficial, right? They hone us, they make us, they shape us into who we're supposed to be. So it's hard to see it sometimes when you're in the middle of moving the rock or feel like you're underneath the rock.
Right.
But, you know, it's there for a reason. And sometimes it's just to make us stronger or point us in the direction that we're supposed to go in. So I love that that's your message. It's just been so in alignment with who we are on the Rock Movers and who I am as a coach as well. So thank you for the gift of your time today and for sharing all your stuff.
Thank you so much.
We'll make sure
I was blessed to be able to number one, meet you, number one.
Thank you.
And then I'm not sure if I begged you to get on this show or not or what. But I'm so glad that we were able to do this. Yeah.
You did not. I was like, you have a book coming out. Well, we need to get you on the show. We need to get your story out there because I'm typically interviewing women. And My husband is just an amazing human, and he, you know, made a point of, you know, there's a lot of men that move rocks for women too, you know, and I wanted to make sure that we're not leaving those men out. We want to make sure their voices are heard as well. And I want my listeners to be introduced to amazing people like yourself and the men that are in our season six. So thank you for being a part of our season six and for all that you're doing. And I'm grateful to know that you are in the beautiful town of Granbury, one of my favorite places. We were talking about Hotel Lucy in our text messages back and forth. Yeah. But if you're not familiar with Texas, you've just got a little lesson here today. But Texas is a beautiful, diverse place. We have so many people coming to it today. But I'm so grateful that you and your wife are here now and your son as well. So thank you for sharing your story. Thank you for sharing your book. Can't wait to get it. We'll make sure that it goes live, I think, in February. Is that correct?
I'm almost certain that we will have it released before the end of the month. So I'm saying before the 31st, but my publisher might surprise me. If she can help me get it out by MLK Junior Day of the 20th, that would be great. But we'll see.
Okay.
We'll see. I will
so
let
we're
you know.
we're recording this in January. So this should be out by no later than
February
1st.
For sure.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, we'll make sure everybody has a link, and if the episode comes.
Gotcha.
Wow, wasn't today's guest amazing? I hope that you enjoyed them as much as I did. And I hope that you got something super valuable. And I also want to know, what are you getting from this? What would you like to see? What are future episodes? Who do we need to be talking to? Who has some amazing rocks that they want to share? And that's by sharing, commenting, and subscribing to the Rock Movers, and then following me over on social media. We want to stay connected. We want to be a part of your world. And I want to invite you to be a part of mine. If you'd like to book a call, go a little bit deeper into some of these topics, you can find a link to book that call on CoachKarenGray.com. You're always invited to join me there, and I can't wait to dive into deeper conversations with you. That's my way of giving back and saying thank you for being a part of our rock moving community. Until the next episode, or until we jump on the call, have a great day and keep moving those rocks.